If you look at an automotive buyer, it's usually a three-month process, right? And during those 3 months, there's 900 interactions from the consumer. An average consumer today will explore 12 brands. They will consider six, and they'll make a decision on two.
Welcome to What If So What, the podcast where we explore what's possible with digital and discover how to make it real in your business. I'm your host, Jim Hertzfeld, and we get shit done by asking digital leaders the right questions. What if, so what, and most importantly, now what? Hey everyone, I have a really great guest on the podcast. It's an industry veteran, a great colleague, and someone who's done some really special work recently he's going to share with us. And that's Keith, if you know him, KT Tomatore. Keith, welcome to the podcast. Why don't you open up, tell us about yourself, what you do here at Proficient, and how you got here?
Well, first off, Jim, thank you for having me. Humbled and honored to be on your podcast and excited to be having this conversation with you. In terms of what I do at Proficient, I run the global automotive practice. I've been here for about 2 years, and my industry experience is pretty vast. I've worked with Ford Motor Company directly and at their agency, GTB. In terms of what I did there was I did all the performance marketing solutions. I ran all of the dealer war rooms. And then after that, I became CEO of a marketing solutions company that really focused on tier two automotive and tier three automotive. So pretty deep in automotive. But Jim, you know, I would say that's part of why I'm here. The other part is I'm really an entrepreneur in a lot of ways, right? My career has been that. And I'll just tell you a funny story. My first job out of college, and I grew up with modest means. So it's probably more like my second job because I had to work full time while I went into college. And I look at that as a great gift because when you grow up modestly, you become very innovative in what you do. So I took a job at Swiss Army Brands, and the job was a customer service job. And they put me in the lowest rung of that, which was there was the B2B business and then the B2C business. I was in the B2C business. Nobody wanted to do it because it's just consumers. And essentially, I learned a couple of things. One is the job title was manager of consumer products. Well, the consumer products were toothpicks, tweezers, and scissor springs, which were the knife implements. And basically, customers would call up and they would request a replacement part that they've either lost or it broke, and I would send it to them. That was the job. But in that job, I decided to, you know, I'm talking to the customer, the end customer. So that's a big advantage. Whenever you're talking to customer, you know, businesses exist to serve a customer. So what I did was Excel was invented in 1985, and this was 1989. So basically, I created a consumer database, and I created a little survey, and I asked the consumers right before I gave them their tweezer toothpick what they liked about Swiss Army, what they wanted, what they needed. And I created this database that eventually became a business plan and eventually became the focus point for the consumer products division, which was watches and sunglasses and suitcases and all that stuff you see today. So it was really a couple things that came through in that job. One, customer is so important. And if you're not talking to the customer and listening to them, you're probably, you know, doing something wrong. And secondly, things aren't always as they appear, but you can turn them to your advantage and to the company's advantage with a little hard work and innovative thinking. And yeah, I just share that with you.
I didn't know that story, KT. And by the way, you've unleashed a whole slew of Swiss Army knife metaphors that we can use to describe you. So that's great. And you brought up something that we talk about on this podcast quite a bit, which is customer empathy, right? And there's no substitute for that direct contact. So that's awesome to hear that you took advantage of that. And you know, that's just valuable truths and insights. You know, the subject we really wanted to get into today was something that's really near and dear to you. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the focus of the recent work you've done is a study around electrification in the automotive industry. Let's just start maybe just kind of level set on what electrification means. There are a few things that sort of sweep the business and sort of cultural realms, you know, like EV or generative AI, where these are like these big business and technology topics that sort of get in everyone's mind. And this is one of them. But I think like a lot of things like that, they require a little bit of a level setting, right? So I think for the average person on the street, you know, oh, it's battery powered car, right? Okay, I guess I'm going to have free energy, right? And I never have to pay for gas again. And I get in and I drive away. So why don't you maybe just level set real quick on what electrification really entails in the industry? And I'd love to hear it kind of from all facets. You have the OEM, which is the manufacturer, the Fords and the Toyotas and the Hondas. You have the suppliers, right, who kind of behind the scenes, like bringing the parts, you know, the batteries themselves together, perhaps. You have the dealers, right? As you mentioned, big part, right? That's how most of our contact in the industry is with the dealer and will be for some time. And then, yep. Of course, what's the impact on owners and drivers and even passengers? And I say that because in the world of, you know, we won't get into autonomous vehicles, but, you know, at some point, are we really drivers anymore? But anyway, give us a kind of a level set on what is electrification in the industry right now in 2024?
That's a great question, Jim. And it's one of those questions that is multidimensional. So let me start with what's driving electrification. I'll talk a little bit about the state of electrification, and then I'll talk about those individual components of the automotive ecosystem that is impacted by it. First off, what's driving electrification is really sustainability and innovation, right? Those two things. And one of that is the legislative requirements. So governments, you know, certainly the United States has put out all kinds of emission requirements. There's 17 states right now that follow the very strict California emission requirements. So that's mm-hmm. driving a lot of the OEM's transformation, if you will, to EV. The other thing that's driving it is the manufacturing process, right? So like when you look at, and I call it disruption in manufacturing, when there's an internal combustion engine, ICE vehicles that are produced, they're produced in a manufacturing process that's sequential. And EVs are very different than that. They are not produced sequential. Because of the electrification and the software components, they are built more in a component-based system. So it's very, very different. And that is happening right now. The other thing, Jim, is the competition, right? It's a free market. There's EV-only manufacturers. There's 65 of them, actually, that operate in the United States today. Some of them are very small. Some of them started as cell phone battery makers, but nonetheless, they're now producing vehicles and they're producing them to market. And so the heritage OEMs, the Fords, the GMs, and all those, they had to pivot to be part of that. And then the last piece of it, Jim, that's so important is connected vehicles are really changing from a luxury to a necessity. And in order to have connected vehicles, it is much, much easier in a vehicle with an EV battery engine than an ICE engine. So those are that's kind of the components as to why suddenly EVs are so important. In terms of the overall industry, even when we started this research a year ago, there was a lot of demand. There wasn't a lot of supply. You could wait a year or even more to get your EV. Today, it's very different, right? The price of an EV in 2022 was $65,000. That's the average price of a new EV. Today, that's $51,000. So the demand has slowed down. We have about 7.5% penetration on EVs today in the United States. I know Europe's much, much higher. But in the United States, it's only at 7.5%. I think we've gotten past all the new adopters, the early adopters with the technology. And so we're entering into a little bit of a different phase where now OEMs are starting to discount EV products. And so it's just a little bit different in that regard.
And that's sort of a natural life cycle for a lot of products, right? So you have your early adopters. Do people wait in line for EV launches like they do an iPhone?
Not today, but when they first came out, Jim, it was an amazing thing because, you know, they just were new and and if you ever driven an EV, they start up very fast. They take off from the start. Yep. The stop to start is amazing on those things. And so people wanted to know what it was like. So initially that was the case, but we've been at 7.5% for a bit. And just to give you some perspective, hybrid vehicles are also at 7.5%. And so it's very interesting what's happening. Yeah. So then you ask me, you know, how does that impact OEMs and the components within the auto system? Well, with OEMs, they have a goal, right? And it's a good goal. And it's kind of how we started our conversation. It's getting a closer relationship with their consumers because heritage OEMs have traditionally said, okay, we'll manufacture the vehicles and dealers, you sell the vehicles and you deal with the consumers. And what was happening was the OEMs were getting further and further away from their consumer, which is a big problem. And so they wanted to use the EV as a way to kind of reset that and say, okay, this is a chance for us to set the price because we know that consumers do not like haggling with dealers. So we can set the price. We can do more of the, you know, build in price, order reserve online. We can give them a little bit of a different experience. And so that's what they've been doing. They've been working on these different customer experiences for EVs. Now, I personally would say that the experiences should traverse way beyond EVs, right? It should just be that experience. But that is what OEMs have used as a stepping stone at this point.
Right.
For dealers, they have to change everything, right? I mean, to be able to sell EVs, you need to have charging stations on your lot. You need to have a forklift in your service bay. You need to have electricians back there in the service bay. There's a lot of training from the OEM, a lot of training from the industry on it. And so they almost had to become certified to be able to sell EVs. And so there's a big makeover on that. And then the other thing is, remember, most OEMs are saying, hey, on EVs, we want to set the price. And so the price is what the price is, which is not what the traditional dealership works on. So big change for that. For suppliers, I think the biggest thing is EVs are very different than ICE vehicles. ICE vehicles have over 3,000 parts per vehicle. EVs have 1,200. And Tesla is working on vehicles right now that are going to have 600 to 900 parts. So what does that mean? That means they have to become more efficient. Their order management, their order inventory, all of that has to become more efficient, or they risk going out of business, right? And some of the suppliers will go out of business just because there's less parts. And then from a consumer, you know, I think this is the interesting thing. Consumers just have to get smart on it. They have to understand their lifestyle. And I feel like, are EVs for everyone? No, I don't think so. Depending on where you live and what your daily activities are and what your drive times are, all that impacts whether or not you should have an EV. But my feeling is consumers have to get smart. They have to be educated. They have to, you know, read up on it. And the good news is the OEMs are sending out a lot of materials to help them. But there's a lot of places where they can go and actually get smart on it. And that would be my sense. But I think it's quite disruptive in the industry overall.
It's interesting. You've mentioned that, you know, we're kind of early, right? And we kind of talked about this research that you've done for a while. Like anything, you kind of have to wait till, you know, when's the right time to sort of dig in and get the reasons behind what's happening and get a little smarter. Tell us about this study. Really, what were kind of the big things you found? Like, give us an overview of like what you did. And then the top things you found, what were some of the big discoveries? What were the big takeaways?
So what we did, I'll talk for a minute just to set it up so everybody knows what the heck we did with this study.
Yeah.
The reason why we thought to do an EV customer journey study was, in many conversations with OEMs and folks who were in charge of the EV areas of Heritage OEMs, they told me that they didn't really understand what the customer journey is. They said there's a lot of false information out there. There's a lot of head trash around charging. It's too expensive. It's going to blow up your house. And they said, you know, and I said, but you know what the journey is. And they said, honestly, KT, we don't. And so I took it back to our research team and said, you know, could we do something about this to help solve an industry problem? And the answer was, yeah, let's do it. And so what we did was we talked to dealers all over the country. We talked to two sets of consumers. We basically divided into consumers that have bought EVs and then consumers that are in market within the next 2 years, but have not yet purchased an EV. We talked to OEMs and we put together our research. So we try to make it so that way we were sensitive to different regions in the United States. It was only focused on the United States, and it was really focused at, you know, what is that customer journey and how we can impact it. So that's what we set out to do, and that's what we did do. Now, what the backdrop changed a little bit, Jim, in that when we started this journey, EVs were, you know, hey, if you want to buy an EV, that's great. It's a 6 month, year long wait, and you sign up and you get them. And then when we concluded the journey, it was sort of, we had a stockpile of EVs and their prices were being reduced a little bit. So that was just the backdrop of what was happening with supply.
World changes. So what was, give us maybe the three biggest takeaways from your mind, and maybe what surprised you the most.
Okay. So the three biggest takeaways are easy. One of them is the differences in geography was startling, Jim. I mean, I talked to a dealer in San Francisco, and EVs are 45% of his business, and he's expecting that to go up. And they were just so much a part of the culture there that it was just, you know, people were even, you know, I talked to a couple consumers and they were like, well, I drive to work, you know, using the hands-free in my Tesla and I don't really even drive. It just program in my office and I'm going back and forth. So that was interesting. Hmm. Then talked to a dealer in the Midwest and it's 0% of their business. And in fact, they spend no time thinking about it. So the geographic differences you know, I had always known that they would be there, but they are even more severe than I had thought.
And how much do you think that is sort of demographic versus just the physics of, you know, like in the Bay Area? First of all, the demographic in the Bay Area, a little more eco-conscious, certainly more tech-oriented, but geographically concentrated in the Midwest, you know, you're spread out. But is that, like, what do you attribute those differences to?
I think a couple of things, Jim. I think one thing is that the EV batteries today do not perform well in cold weather states. So you have less range there. So okay, that's going to be one factor. The other factor is there's a political aspect to it, right? I mean, there's no doubt that came up during the study a lot. Yeah. And so in some areas, they were completely bought into this, you know, new Green Deal. And in other areas, no way. The other thing that resonated really with me, and it happened in a couple areas, like, well, I was in Europe and they were totally, completely embracing sustainability. I thought it was probably priority number one. And when I would talk to the OEM executives here in the United States, they felt a little differently. It was a little bit of a resentment that this top-down government push was causing them to make shifts in their business that may not be the best for their ROI and stuff. So there was a lot of things like that that resonated throughout. And then the dealers, of course, had their own thoughts. There were certain dealers, you know, if you were in a California emission state and you got more supply of EVs when the demands were light, you know, you had a better outlook. If you didn't, if you were in a state that didn't have those emission requirements, EVs weren't really a factor. During the study, some dealers said to me, I'm not going to sell EVs. I might at some point, but right now I just can't have the distraction because there's not enough of them to impact sales and I'm doing what my consumers want, which they don't want. So I do think
the inventory,
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And I do think it just depends on where you are. If you're a rural dealer, EVs might not make as much sense as if you're living in a city like, you know, San Francisco or Sacramento, where, you know, EVs make more sense.
Do you see big differences between sort of the retail buyer and sort of the commercial buyer, right? Do you see, let's say in a rural area and maybe it's very agricultural, are you seeing anything around adoption of EVs for commercial reasons like, you know, tractors and combines? And
I think fleet is one area that pops more so than farming yet. Although it will. I mean, I think that fleet makes a lot of sense from an EV standpoint because of the control that they can embark on the vehicles. You know, they can control everything through software updates and manage routes and manage all that. So I think that's really an important aspect of it, and just costs too. So I think that that's one area that we're seeing a lot. Agriculture is a little different in that sense that they're looking for different fuel types. I mean, they want to save money and be more productive. And of course, the environment's important to them because that's what they do. But I don't think they're sold completely on EVs yet that we're seeing. One of the things that's very different is the way an EV shopper shops, you know. So if you look at the shopping experience today of an automotive shopper, well, there's a couple things. First off, this is the first time in history that the majority of automotive shoppers are millennials. So that's a very big difference.
Oh, interesting.
And the second thing with that, Jim, is if you look at an automotive buyer, it's usually a 3-month process, right? And during those 3 months, there's 900 interactions from the consumer. And 71% of these interactions are on the mobile. And so when you think about that, I mean, an average consumer today will explore 12 brands, they will consider 6, and they'll make a decision on 2. And so when you think about that and the EVs, I mean, you can buy a Tesla with 10 clicks and have it delivered to the showroom or in certain states to your home. And that is what younger consumers want, right? So what we found was there's two things. Younger consumers don't really have an aversion to dealers. They just don't use them. So they don't have any problem with them. They just really don't use them because they want to do more online, right? They want to do it all themselves online. And then we look at the dealer experience, which is another part that might be ripe for AI, for better experiences. Like, people do not want to spend 4 or 5 hours today sitting in a dealership doing paperwork or just being upsell. That's something that's unattractive to them. Now, spending time at a dealership that's a showroom, so like EV buyers were very pleased with their showroom experience because they got to understand more about the vehicle, No one was selling them anything. It was all about the product. It was learning. It was informational, and it was good. So those are some of the takeaways that we had.
So what can we learn from this? I mean, how can we make, in terms of making it actionable? You know, what are you telling OEMs and suppliers and dealers? How can they capitalize on this research? Because I think we all agree this is going to grow, right? We're at 7%, so it's not going away.
Nope.
It's going to continue to grow. It's going to mature. So given that high likelihood, what can these stakeholders do about it?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing, Jim, is exactly what you said. Embrace it, right? It's not going away. Sustainability is going to be a thing, and that's going to be more than just the vehicles. They're going to be the products like, you know, tires and other components of the vehicle are also going to be sustainable. So it's not going away. So what I think they could do is do two things from an OEM standpoint. And so as we're meeting with OEMs all over the globe, really, telling them that the customer experience has to be better, right? Like, we have great tools today. We're doing things like virtual showrooms, virtual test drives, creating that experience for the consumer so they can do, you know, what I just said, 900 interactions in a 3-month span. They want to do that on their own in online and creating those experiences, right? On their own terms, in convenience, everybody's super busy, and that's how they want to shop. And Proficient can certainly help them with this, but leveraging the emerging technologies, being able to give them great customer experiences. I think that's one thing that every OEM should be doing right now. And if they're not, they're going to start falling behind because the Teslas and the Polestars and those EV-only manufacturers are getting that, right? I mean, they're making sure that they're going direct to consumer. And most consumers want more of that. Now, from a dealer perspective, I don't think dealers are going away anytime soon. And I think they could be tremendously important to OEMs. I just think they have to change. Mm-hmm. And they have to also give a good experience, right? And the experience has to be less about selling. We talk about in a consulting world, like, it's not about us. It's not about Proficient. It's about what our clients want and need. And we adapt to what those needs are. And I think that's what dealers have to do. I think they have to create a great experience. So when you go to a dealership, it's comfortable. And a lot of dealers, to their credit, are starting to change over this. There's rooms for children to play in. There's, you know, there's workstations so you can work. There's software updates now happening so you don't have to come in at every time. They pick up and they drop off your vehicles. They give you an experience so that way when you're talking to somebody who's an expert about that particular vehicle and you're learning more about the vehicle you're going to drive yourself or put your family's lives in and drive them. So that's where the dealerships have a great opportunity. I think what I would advise my supplier clients to do, I mean, and a lot of this is going to be about supply chain. A lot of it's going to be about inventory management, order management, really becoming more efficient, to really take a step back and look at their entire process and then think about ways to become much, much more efficient. It's because it's not going to stop at EVs. It's going, yeah, we got connected. We got subscriptions. We've got direct to consumers happening, B2B, all that's happening online and stuff. And I just think they have to get out of these legacy systems that just don't work today. So big opportunity for them to do that. And the most fit companies will survive. And then from a consumer standpoint, right, I think, you know, it's about choice. To me, it's about choice, right? So if you want a hybrid, you should be buying a hybrid. If you want an EV, there's some great products out there for that. There's plug-in hybrid EVs, which is, they're about 1.5% of the industry today, but that's happening. The OEMs are looking at things like fuel cell and hydrogen and all sorts of other alternatives. So these things are going to continue to evolve. They're working on batteries now that are half the weight and double the range. We'll see what happens with them, but they could be game changers too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, what I think about, when you mentioned 65 EV OEMs, and I could think about the automotive industry 100 years ago, you know, how many brands there were. It's, if you did the homework and you looked at Packard and Willys and, you know, all these brands that no one's, Oldsmobile, right? There's been all that consolidation, even within a company like GM. But it's great competition, right? It generates innovation. You know, and I think you're right. The ones that respond to how the customers and drivers and owners and passengers want to shop will win. So they have to sort of be the Swiss Army knife, you know, of their category. I just had to pull that back in, KT.
I love that you did that. And you know, the thing I love the most is you're exactly right. Like, do I think all these companies are going to be here in 10 years? Probably not. But I do think they serve a valuable purpose of pushing the industry forward So, you know, exactly. One of my favorite things to do is to go to Henry Ford Museum and go through their car exhibit, and you see all those, you know, many of those nameplates that you're talking about. They're not there anymore, but each of those nameplates has played a huge role in pushing the industry forward. And that's what's happening now, because when I talk to heritage OEMs, they're all about, we need to get more efficient. We need to get more nimble. We need to transform between hardware and software. I mean, they may be pushed a little bit out of their comfort zones, but I think that's when really true greatness happens, when people are pushed out of their comfort zones.
Totally agree. Got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Well, KT, thanks for being on, and thanks for doing this research and pushing the envelope. And we'll share in the show notes and beyond where they can get their hands on it and how they can get a hold of you. And thanks again for being here, and have a great day.
Thank you for having me, Jim. It was a pleasure, and look forward to talking more about this.
You've been listening to What If, So What? A digital strategy podcast from Proficient with Jim Hertzfeld. We want to thank our Proficient colleagues, J.D. Norman and Rick Bauer, for our music. Subscribe to the podcast and don't miss a single episode. You can find this season, along with show notes, at proficient.com. Thanks for listening.